Welcome to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Hank is president of the Christian Research Institute, a ministry dedicated to proclaiming and defending the essential teachings of the historic Christian faith because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we pick up where we ended on our previous program and continue the conversation between CRI Executive Vice President Dr. Larry Johnston and Houston Baptist University Professor of English Dr. Louis Marcos. Let's now join Larry Johnston and Louis Marcos in their discussion.
As we think of nature, and I live and spend most of my time in Colorado, where nature is evidence of God's handiwork, many people, Christians and non-Christians, find it absolutely inconceivable that the extraordinary complexity and clear appearance of design in the cosmos could be the result of random chance and blind accident. And I'm curious, how have apologists from Aristotle to people like Philip Johnson and the intelligent design movement, how have they shown that the stunning complexity of our world and of nature just cannot be accounted for by a simple chain of material causes and effects?
Well, let's step back. Okay, what does intelligent design mean? What it means is that there are all sorts of structures in our universe, including in ourselves on a microbiological level, that point to intelligent design. They could not have gotten there simply by a random system of changes and mutations. That what we see in our universe points to an intelligent designer. That when we look in the world, there's not just matter and energy. There's matter and energy and information. And the only source of real information that we know of is intelligent design. Now, let's start in a little bit more fun way, because I want to argue, as many of the intelligent design people have, that all the secular scientists actually use intelligent design all the time. And let me give you a real simple example. If you are an anthropologist, and of course you can be a Christian anthropologist, but most anthropologists until very recently have been absolute secular humanists, okay? I mean, just like sociology and psychology, until very, very recently we've been taking those disciplines back. But traditionally, anthropologists, you know, who study ancient man, usually are very, very secular humanists. Now, if you're that, you can start studying an area, right? And you might find a bone here or this there or a piece of rock and whatnot. And you look at it and you can tell right away that it's just random. Weathering caused it to look like that, right? But then you find certain bones or certain flint stones that have clearly been shaped and given a cutting edge. And as a scientist, you can immediately distinguish what is there by chance and the forces of evolutionary weathering and what was actually designed by human creatures. They know, right? If you're a sociologist, anthropologist, you can tell the difference between a bunch of stones that have somehow randomly arranged themselves in a circle. You could tell the difference between that and Stonehenge. When you see Stonehenge, you immediately know that this structure has been intelligently designed. Now, you might not know who did it, right? They used to think it was the Druids. Now they think it's actually much, much older than the Druids. But you immediately recognize, if you're going through South Dakota and you look up at the side of a cliff and you see something that roughly looks like a nose and a lip, you can immediately say, oh, that's just weathering. That's just what happens randomly. But then you turn a corner and you see a mountain that has four heads on it, and you recognize those four heads as belonging to four presidents that you've studied in school, and you immediately recognize that Mount Rushmore was intelligently designed and didn't just happen, right? Here's my favorite example, Larry. Again, if you're a little bit of a nerd like you and I, we all know that Carl Sagan started something that all the geeky boys like. It's called SETI. Do you remember what SETI stands
for,
Larry?
Sure, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Yeah, you know, see, it's great. All the guys know this, right? The Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And what was Carl Sagan doing? He was scouring the universe for any sign of intelligence. And you know what? If he found something like, I don't know, a quasar beating out the prime numbers, he would immediately recognize, whoa, there is intelligence. This must point to aliens, right? So when you set up something like SETI, you can distinguish between random things in the universe and something that's designed. So all science knows how to do it. But then suddenly, when you come to our world and you look inside the human being and you find all of our cells have this microscopic strand of something called DNA that is programmed with more information than any 10 supercomputers, right? An absolutely clear example of intelligent design. And what do you say? It's just random, okay? Random events cannot create information because the DNA, you know, even as Bill Gates, people like that, they look at the DNA and they realize it's been programmed. And yet, suddenly, when we are presented with overwhelming evidence of design, then we jump back and say, oh, it's just random. And actually, I'm talking too much here, but let me prove to you, by the way, that Richard Dawkins knows intelligent design. There's a wonderful documentary called Expelled with Ben Stein. And in Expelled, Ben Stein, with wonderful humor, tries to show how any scientist these days that tries to practice intelligent design is going to be attacked by the secular community. And at the end, he has a debate with Richard Dawkins. And he starts asking Richard Dawkins what we're talking about right now. You know, how is it possible that the DNA, you know, so front-loaded with information, how can it possibly evolve? What is your answer? And Richard Dawkins says, well, it could have happened like this. Aliens could have seeded the Earth with DNA. Of course, those aliens must themselves have evolved by some kind of Darwinian means. Okay, now, a lot of people that watch Expelled jumped on that and said, oh, Ben Stein tricked Richard Dawkins into saying that. He didn't trick Richard Dawkins. If anybody ever reads The God Delusion, about two-thirds of the way through the book, he makes that very argument. It's called panspermia. It's the idea that aliens seeded our DNA. And do you know who came up with that idea? It was not Richard Dawkins that came up with the idea of panspermia. It was a guy named Crick, as in Watson and Crick, the two guys that discovered the double helix organization scheme of the DNA. Now, Crick was an atheist, just like Sagan, just like Richard Dawkins, but he knew that the DNA could not have been evolved, and so he suggested that aliens did it. So what you need to understand is that Richard Dawkins believes in intelligent design. He looks at the DNA, he recognizes it could not have evolved, it must have been designed by intelligence, but because God is off the table, he thinks it's okay to say aliens.
I had to chuckle when you mentioned SETI. I don't know if you recall Senator William Proxmire, but Proxmire, when he was in the Senate many years ago, used to have what I think he called the Golden Fleece Award, which was awarded to those people who are wasting extravagant sums of taxpayers' money.
Yes.
And he actually, the reason he moved, he introduced legislation to defund SETI. And his reason for doing so was he said he thought that the funds could be much better spent looking for intelligent life in Washington, D.C.
I love it. That's great. Might be a harder search.
Yeah. Let me just mention for those just joining us, this is Larry Johnston. I am interviewing Dr. Lou Marcos, author of Atheism on Trial, a tremendous resource that we're offering to those people who are supporting the ministry financially this month. Lou, a section of your book, Atheism on Trial, deals with miracles, and among critical thinkers, anyone who attempts to dive deep into the possibility, the probability, the feasibility of miracles is going to encounter at some point the name of David Hume. Who was Hume, and why did he think that miracles were an impossibility?
David Hume is an amazing character. Sort of like Darwin, David Hume is somebody that secular humanists are always pointing back to because they believe that he proved certain things that he really didn't prove. He wrote a book in which he spent a chapter in which he thinks that he disproved miracles. He did not do so, but he thinks he does, and he does it in one chapter. Okay, and people continue to point back to Hume as if he did it. And ultimately, there are two facets to this. Okay, ultimately, behind Hume's idea, and many other people today, is Miracles violate the laws of nature, therefore miracles are impossible. Or let's make the full thing. You cannot violate the laws of nature. They can't be broken. Miracles break the laws of nature, therefore miracles don't happen. That would be what we call a syllogism, right? Now, first of all, let's just take a step back. And again, one of the things that really upsets me is people that do New Testament studies and say all sorts of crazy things about the New Testament are often people that don't seem to have read anything else that was written at the same time as the New Testament. In other words, they talk about it as an ancient book, but they don't seem to understand how distinctive the Gospels are from other books. All right, about 50 years, maybe a little bit less, then the writing of the Gospels was a famous book called The Metamorphoses by Ovid. The great Roman Latin poet Ovid wrote a book of mythology in which he tells all sorts of stories about how people turned into ants and into birds and into trees and all sorts of changes, metamorphoses. All right. Now, that book is full of miracles, right? And it was written maybe a generation before the Gospels, which tell all the miracles of Jesus. But if you read those books side to side, you will see how radically different they are. The only reason we can enjoy reading Ovid, and I teach it every year in the Honors College, the only reason we can enjoy teaching Ovid is because we know it's fiction. If we had any idea or fear that anything that happened in Ovid might actually happen in real life, we would be terrified and not read that book, right? Because if those miracles are true, then we're living in a topsy-turvy, arbitrary world where anything can happen. We can't even hold on to our own bodies, right? But if the miracles recorded in the Gospels are true, then everything's wonderful. Then the God who created this universe and created nature has come into it and is in the process of healing it and healing us. So first of all, we need to understand that when the Gospels are actually read in their historical context, we understand that the miracles recorded in them are totally different, okay? They are sober miracles based on eyewitness accounts. Okay, with that as background, now let's start talking about what miracles do. Again, Hume just takes for granted that miracles violate the laws of nature. And for people like Hume, by the way, laws of nature basically is God. And even for Spinoza, God equals nature, but you could almost say God equals the laws of nature, because that's really what they worship, the laws of nature. That's their idol, if you will. Now, yeah, I can understand that if the laws of nature were broken by miracles, as they are again and again in Ovid. But that's not really what happens in the Gospels. Let me give you an example of a miracle. Okay. Let's say I take a very expensive Ming Dynasty vase and I hold it up in my right hand and I let it go and drop it. Now, what's going to happen? It's going to fall to the ground and shatter. Why is that going to happen? Because of the law of gravity. You let go and the laws of gravity that are operative in our world will drag it to the earth and smash it, right? Now, watch this now. I open up my right hand, and the vase starts to fall, but before it hits the ground, my left hand shoots out and catches it. Okay, have I just broken the law of gravity? I've not broken the law of gravity. If I open my left hand, it will continue to fall and shatter. I haven't broken the law of gravity. I have added in a new factor that has suspended the law, but only suspended. Because if I open my left hand, gravity will take over again and the vase will smash. People seem to forget that everybody that Jesus healed in the Holy Land eventually died, right? What Jesus did is temporarily suspend the laws of nature, but once the miracle was done, the regular laws took over. God did this incredible miracle called the virgin birth, in which he himself, however exactly he did it, in which he himself placed the seed inside Mary's womb. But once conception occurred, nature took over, and Mary had a normal 9-month pregnancy and gave birth to Jesus on the first Christmas. Right? Cana of Galilee, I'm quoting C.S. Lewis now in a book he wrote called Miracles. Cana of Galilee, Jesus turned water into wine. Well, every day water turns into wine, but it's a very, very slow process. But when Jesus does it, snap, in a second, suddenly the mask is off, and we see the miracle that was always there, and we realize that the God of nature, who created it, is now in it and is working. And so miracles do not violate the laws of nature. Miracles, I like to say what a miracle is a wonderful moment when we see what nature was truly meant to be in the garden before sin came and before depravity came and before our universe was subjected to futility. But it won't always be. And there are a few miracles, Lewis says, that although they don't violate the laws of nature, transcend them, as when Jesus walks on the water. There, what we're getting is a glimpse of that perfect new heaven and new earth towards which we're leading. Okay, so again, we need to understand what miracles are before we attack them. And Hume just takes for granted miracles violate the laws, therefore they don't happen.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin CRI Executive Vice President Dr. Larry Johnston and Professor Louis Marcos in their conversation. In recent years, atheists have forwarded virulent criticisms against Christianity, claiming that they have a more enlightened, scientific, and sophisticated worldview. Despite what these atheists might think, their verbal assaults are nothing new. In his book, Atheism on Trial, Dr. Louis Marcos confronts these recycled claims and shows that they have already been disproven by Christian thinkers of the past. And you can use the same logic to silence these claims today. To receive your copy of Atheism on Trial as our thanks for your support, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches. Or visit equip.org. We'll return with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast in just a few moments. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
In recent years, atheists have forwarded virulent criticisms against Christianity, claiming that they have a more enlightened, scientific, and sophisticated worldview. Despite what these atheists might think, their verbal assaults are nothing new. In his book, Atheism on Trial, Dr. Louis Marcos confronts these recycled claims and shows that they have already been disproven by Christian thinkers of the past. And you can use the same logic to silence these claims today. Are you ready to put atheism on trial? Get equipped with answers to the tough questions about your faith and speak with confidence, knowing that the trial of public opinion versus universal truth has already been held and Christ is the victor. To receive your copy of Atheism on Trial, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org.
Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. The role that listeners like you have played in CRI's ministry has always been vital. Now it could well be more critical than ever. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the financially critical month of June and receive Atheism on Trial by Dr. Louis Marcos as our thanks for your generous support. To make a gift to support CRI's many mind-changing outreaches, simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us online at equip.org. Let's now rejoin CRI Executive Vice President Dr. Larry Johnston and Professor Louis Marcos in their conversation.
A beautiful quote from my favorite Christian human development scholar, the late James Loder, who was a professor at Princeton Theological Seminary. He had a quote that I've just savored for decades. He said, "Miracle needs to be seen not as a momentary disruption, but as a partial disclosure of the dynamic order that underlies the creation and redemption of the entire universe. The logic of the Spirit that brings order out of chaos and transforms human lives into the human likeness of Christ." I just love that. That is rich.
You know, I wish you told me about him, and I wish I had read him, because it's just remarkable. It happened about 20 or 25 years ago, just when I was kind of starting my writing career, and I was thinking about miracles, and it just came to me, and this was the phrase that came to me. "A miracle is not a violation of the laws of nature, but a sublime act during which the Creator, for a brief, glorious moment, restores the truly natural, that is, original order of His creation." And that just sort of came to me. And out of that, you know, I started writing apologetics. It's one of those things when the blinders come off, when you suddenly wake up and your eyes are clear and you see the glory for what it is. You know, what do we read in Colossians about Jesus? "In Him all things consist." I took enough science to remember that we still don't really know why the nucleus of the atom doesn't break apart, right? Why doesn't it, what holds together the nucleus? There are certain things that we don't, you know, we come up with names, strong nuclear force, weak nuclear, come on, all these names, we don't really understand it. And yet, in Him, all things consist, all things hold together. The miracle is around us all the time, and we just don't see it, right? As Lewis reminds us, to a certain extent, doctors don't heal us. Our body heals itself. What the doctor does is immobilize the wound and fight infection. But it's ultimately the body that heals itself. Again, what God has put into nature, the unbelievable fruition of nature, the magic that this dry, dead thing called an acorn, but you bury it literally in the earth, and out of it springs not only an oak tree, but potentially an entire oak forest. You tell me there's not magic? You know, I raised my kids, Larry, I taught them this simple phrase. The world is full of magic. You just have to have eyes to see it and ears to hear it. Now, you may think I'm going a little crazy here, but remember, I'm an English professor. And one of the things that attracted me to C.S. Lewis the first time I read him is that Lewis spent the first half of his life as an atheist. When Lewis became a believer at the age of 32, guess what? His return to Christianity, that actually allowed him to reaccess his love of magic, imagination, and fairy tales. Too often in our country, a lot of Christians think, if I'm a Christian, I have to distance myself from fairy tales and imagination and all of that. But no, once we realize that the God who created the world actually entered into the world and became a man and lived and died and resurrected, the great miracle, as Lewis called it, the incarnation, that God could become man. And once you realize that, you see the magic that's all around us. I know that's a scary word sometimes for evangelicals like myself, but it's true magic. It's true mystery. It is the paradox at the center of everything, that Christ is both two and one.
It's wonder, the very important right brain function that has been lost in much of the snarling logicality of left brain dominance in our culture today, and finding a balance between those two hemispheres of the brain and how those two hemispheres of the brain construct reality differently is, in my book, pretty key. You know, I don't know where you are on the two books position, but I am unashamedly a two-booker, you know, believing that God has written two books. He's the author of the book of his works or nature, and also the book of his word, Revelation. And yet I continue to see consistent errors among what I would call the one-bookers, those who believe in only in science or only in the Bible. And I guess a question that I would have is, why is it smart in today's increasingly scientific climate for Christians to be conversant with both books?
I think they need to. And God reveals himself. What we need to remember as Christians is something, and this is great, because what I'm going to talk about now is absolutely clear, both in Aquinas and in Calvin. Okay, and if those guys can agree on something, I think maybe that's pretty important. Okay, and at the very center of Christian theology is the distinction between general revelation and special revelation. This is not only key to Catholic theology, this is the way Calvin begins his Institutes. Also, this is the way the book of Romans begins. The difference is general revelation is the way that God speaks to all people at all times. He speaks specifically through two things, through his creation, through nature, and through our conscience. C.S. Lewis would add that he speaks through the good dreams of the pagans as well, that God speaks to all people. That's why in Romans chapter 1, we are without excuse, because God's nature and glory and power is completely on display in his creation. And that's why in Romans chapter 2, Paul tells us that even the Gentiles who are without the law are a law unto themselves, for the law has been written in their heart, ultimately has been written in their conscience. So it's very clear in the Bible and in biblical theology that God speaks through general revelation, but he also speaks through special revelation. That's when he speaks directly through the Old Testament, the New Testament, the prophets, and supremely through Christ. And we need to pay attention to both. When we speak about natural law, we're really speaking about God's general revelation, the way God speaks to all people through conscience and through nature. And we need to study that, right? Let me kind of put this in a wonderful way. Psalm 19, which was C.S. Lewis's favorite psalm, begins, "The heavens are telling the glory of the Lord. The skies are proclaiming his handiwork." Right? God does speak through his creation. But what's really neat about that psalm is the first half of the psalm talks about nature. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they are not silent. Their voice is going out to all the world. But the second half of that psalm moves away from nature and starts talking about the law, the Torah. And what's really cool is in the first half of the psalm, when it's talking about nature, the word used for God, the heavens are telling the glory of the Lord, is the word Elohim, the sort of generic word for God, like we use our own word, God. It's generic, right? But as soon as we start, the psalmist starts talking about the law, it switches to Yahweh, God's covenant name, right? So God speaks to us directly by his covenant name in the law, but he still speaks to us more generally in our conscience and through creation. And we need to access both of those books if we are going to dialogue. Just like Christians are realizing, we need to speak the language of natural law if we are going to engage the secular humanist in the marketplace of ideas, in what was called the naked public square. Richard John Neuhouse called the naked public square. Now, unfortunately, Larry, for a long time, a lot of Protestants, like myself, evangelicals, Calvinists, a lot of us were a little bit leery about natural law because we saw it as more of a Catholic idea. But it's not just a Catholic idea, it's a Christian idea. And slowly and thankfully, more and more Christians in the public square are realizing that we can make connections, we can build a bridge by pointing to things like the natural law and pointing to great. Now, hopefully on a one-on-one basis, we may be able to slowly draw people from that natural law into Christ himself. But in terms of the marketplace, in terms of talking to academia, this is a good bridge that we can build and we can begin the conversation. And we need to understand that whatever the secular humanists are saying, almost every major discovery in science in the last 50 years has actually pointed to God and pointed to theism. So if we would be, you know, brave enough to look at that, we would have an incredible ground where we can dialogue.
Yeah, I think one of the points that we don't want lost here is that people today too often succumb to the illusion that many of today's debates are new, when in fact they're at least centuries and sometimes millennia old.
Yeah.
And we don't want serious Christians, thinking Christians, to be unaware that many of these debates were effectively lost by atheists, and that their arguments today are just digging up these desiccated old corpses.
Now, let me give a really good example of this. Okay, again, another thing that people like to point to Hume. Not only is it believed that Hume disproved miracles, it's also believed that Hume gave Christianity the knockout punch of all time, what's called the problem of pain, or the problem of suffering and evil. And the problem of pain is very simple to formulate, and Hume formulates it this way himself. According to Christianity, God is all-loving and all-powerful. But the fact that there is pain and suffering in the world suggests either that God is not powerful enough to eradicate the suffering, or is not loving enough to care enough to eliminate it. Now, when Hume made that argument, he was basically quoting Epicurus, one of the early, not exactly pre-Socratic, a little bit later, more like 300, but back to somebody that's BC. This is not a new argument. This argument has been around forever, and it's in the Bible too, because what's the book of Job and the book of Habakkuk about if it's not about the problem of pain and suffering? So it's been around forever, but people keep going back to it again and again. Well, first of all, let's realize that the problem of pain only becomes a problem if you actually have a God like the God in the Bible. If you don't have a God like the God in the Bible, there is no problem of pain, right? In fact, if there is no God at all, then we shouldn't even be aware of the fact that the world is unjust, because the only way you can say something is unjust is if you have something just to measure it against. But if there is no God, if all there is Darwinian survival of the fittest, natural selection, then we wouldn't even have a concept of justice to make us say, oh, that's unjust. Okay? So first of all, the problem is not even a problem until you have a God who reveals himself as all-powerful and all-loving. But let me just mention something here. Okay, first of all, what's really funny about the problem of pain, no matter how often it's drawn out, real philosophers know that on a philosophical level, the argument of the problem of pain has already been resolved by a guy named Alvin Plantinga, one of the most famous living philosophers, a strong Christian. And Alvin Plantinga basically showed philosophically that this is not a problem, because it all depends on how you define the word all-loving and all-powerful. Yes, God's all-powerful, but all-powerful may mean he is able to do everything that it's possible to do. Well, maybe there are some things that are impossible, not because God is not all-powerful, but because this is the kind of world that he created. And maybe loving doesn't mean always removing pain from us, but loving means that God is in control and uses that pain for good.
We'll pick up CRI Executive Vice President Dr. Larry Johnston's conversation with Professor Louis Marcos in just a few moments. The Christian Research Institute is blessing people around the world through our many outreaches. From broadcasts, podcasts, the Christian Research Journal, and the millions of yearly visits to equip.org coming from all parts of the world, it's no exaggeration to say that these would all quickly disappear without friends like you. And because June is one of the most financially critical months of the year, we're praying for an outpouring of support. We are passionate about proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ, and the need for these outreaches has never been greater. Stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the key month of June, and receive a copy of Atheism on Trial by Dr. Louis Marcos as our thanks for your support. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. That's 888 7000CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be right back with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.
In recent years, atheists have forwarded virulent criticisms against Christianity, claiming that they have a more enlightened, scientific, and sophisticated worldview. Despite what these atheists might think, their verbal assaults are nothing new. In his book, Atheism on Trial, Dr. Lewis Marcos confronts these recycled claims and shows that they have already been disproven by Christian thinkers of the past. And you can use the same logic to silence these claims today. Are you ready to put atheism on trial? Get equipped with answers to the tough questions about your faith and speak with confidence, knowing that the trial of public opinion versus universal truth has already been held and Christ is the victor. To receive your copy of Atheism on Trial, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. From the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Hank Unplugged podcast to the Christian Research Journal and CRI's vast free website resources accessed by more than 200,000 users each month, these would all quickly disappear without friends like you. And because truth and knowledge are indispensable weapons in the battles now being fought for our future as a free people, as thanks for your support, Hank Hanegraaff is offering Professor Lewis Marcos' new book, Atheism on Trial, Refuting the Modern Arguments Against God. To receive your copy of Atheism on Trial, just call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches during the financially crucial month of June. 888-7000-CRI or visit us online at equip.org. Let's again listen in as CRI Executive Vice President Dr. Larry Johnston and Professor Lewis Marcos continue their conversation on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
I think too often we toss around the term God as though there is some consensus, some semantic bargain on who or what God is. We've talked a little bit about the God of the philosophers. You've touched obviously on some biblical glimpses of the nature of God. I'm curious, in what ways would you say is the God of Abraham different from the God of Aristotle?
This is a very important distinction. And what happens, especially with the problem of pain, is people play fast and loose and say, what the God of the philosophers is he is the God who starts the Big Bang, but doesn't do anything else. The God of the philosophers is an idea that we need to give us an origin. We need an unmoved mover. We need something to set everything in motion. We need something to give organization an origin to everything. And of course, God is those things, right? But if that's all that God is, then we're not talking about the God of Scripture. We're not talking about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The covenant God who speaks to Abraham is a God who is intimately involved in his world. The God of the philosophers is ultimately a deistic God. A deistic God is often described as the watchmaker God. He's the God who creates the watch, winds it up, and then lets it go off on its own. A lot of people treat God that way. That is not the God of the Scriptures. That's why, Larry, I have little to no patience with Christians who call themselves theistic evolutionists, right? Oh, yeah, we believe in God, but everything is done. It's like theistic evolution is another way of saying scientific deism, a God who's not involved at all. The trouble is that what happens is, in philosophical arguments about the problem of pain, they set up this deistic God, this God of the philosophers, they set him up, but because he's a God that doesn't do anything, that doesn't really have any likes or dislikes, that doesn't make covenants, that doesn't involve himself in the world, then he's a totally impotent God. And so what you're doing is creating a straw God instead of a straw man. You're creating a God, and then you're attacking that God for doing nothing to help you in a crisis. But of course that God can't help you in a crisis, because he's a deistic God that ignores everything. Right? So it's a kind of a classic bait-and-switch kind of ploy. You set up a God who cannot involve himself and doesn't do anything, and then you turn around and attack him for not doing anything. As Lewis said, when I was an atheist, I hated God for not existing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a weird thing. He's one or the other. And so, again, maybe that's the best way. You're setting up a straw God, and this, of course, is a God that doesn't care about anything. He's not a covenant God. The God of the Bible is intimately involved in the world, in the flow of history, and in the individual lives of every person on the planet. That's the real God.
I want to shift gears a bit here, because in your book, you say something, Lou, that I found very powerful and very thought-provoking. You say, if it could be proven that Christ did not rise from the dead, I would leave the church and become a Stoic.
I do, and I say that to my students, and I shock them a little bit.
You go on to say that if Jesus did not rise, if he was only a man, then we're on our own down here. If Jesus did not conquer death, and with it, sin and the devil, then all the religious rituals in the world are shams, powerless to save or transform or give new life. If Jesus didn't walk out of the tomb, then Christianity is the greatest hoax ever played on the human race. And if it is a hoax, then I, for one, would give up religion. You go on to say that you would opt to be a Stoic if Christianity were not true. Again, for our non-philosophers, what exactly is a Stoic, and how is Christianity perhaps both like and unlike Stoicism?
Let's talk about this, and then this is chapter 10 of my book that I really enjoyed writing. Okay, first of all, let's just step back for a second. There was a famous thinker named Karl Popper, and he said that one of the criteria of a system that shows whether that worldview, that paradigm, is true, is whether or not it's falsifiable. Right? If your worldview is true and real and answers all the questions, then it has to have the ability to be disproven. In other words, you've got to say, yes, I rest on this system, but I do admit that if you can show that this part of my system is false, then my system would fall apart. Right? It's got to be non-falsifiable. I would argue that Freudianism is not falsifiable because anytime you run into a glitch, they'll just say, oh, you're just resisting psychoanalysis, right? That's just but no, Christianity is a falsifiable religion. Christianity rests upon a historical event called the resurrection. And if it could be proven that Jesus did not rise from the dead, then Christianity would be a hoax. And that's exactly what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15. If Christ did not rise from the dead, then we are to be of all people the most pitied. Okay, so if Christ did not raise from the dead, then what he said wasn't true. And like I said, we're alone here, okay? I mean, again, yes, Jesus was a prophet, but the world has got plenty of prophets, okay? We don't have a lack of prophets to tell us how we should live. The problem is not that we lack prophets. The problem is that we don't follow them, and we can't, okay? So if Jesus is only a prophet, and he did not conquer sin and Satan and death, then we're alone, okay? There's plenty of ideas out there, but there's no proof. There's no proof that God cares and that he has conquered the greatest of foes. So what do you do? What do I do? I'm now in a world where, I have a lot of respect for some of the things that Jews do and Muslims do and Buddhists do and Hindus do. But why would I join a system that doesn't answer all the questions, that doesn't have the power to save? And so my point would be, if Christ didn't rise from the dead, if Christianity is not true, and therefore God has never really spoken, at least not spoken in the way we need to hear, then what do I do? Well, I think the second thing, maybe this is a very male thing as opposed to a female thing, but the next thing I would do is play it safe. And the best way to play it safe is to become a Stoic. Every year I teach Marcus Aurelius, who wrote a thing called The Meditations, right? He was writing. Other Stoics would include a person named Seneca. There's another person named Epictetus. Those are probably the three most famous Stoic writers from the ancient world. Marcus Aurelius also happened to be a Roman emperor, right? And in Stoicism, okay, the point is to follow your duty, do what is right, and live your life that way. Don't worry about what happens after you die, okay? Don't worry about where you came from. Okay, just live a life of balance and moderation, do your duty, perform your function, and leave all those questions to other people. Now, again, I'm not a Stoic because Christ rose from the dead, but if Christ didn't rise from the dead and there's no other option, I do respect the Stoic who tries to live his life by duty, who tries to do what is right. And Stoicism does have overlaps with the teachings of Christ. Marcus Aurelius, who probably did not read the New Testament, often talks about each of us as a branch in a tree, or each of us as a part of a body. Very, very similar to what it says in the New Testament about how Christ is the vine, we are the branches. Very similar to Paul speaking about the body of Christ. So there is a good understanding of that kind of unity. But here's the problem, okay? When you lose the fact that Christ himself is the vine or the branch, the vine into which the branches are, when you lose the fact that Christ himself is the body, Stoicism, which I think is the best option, has a danger to it. And the danger is that you just become a cog in the state. You just become part of the general will, as Rousseau would call it, and you sort of lose your individuality. Only in Christianity, where Christ is the vine and we are the branches, can we be one with the body of Christ, one with the church, one with Christ himself, and yet still be a full individual created by God. So Stoicism is good in its call to duty, but apart from a living incarnate God who died and resurrected, apart from that, that duty can lose its joy, can lose its life, can lose its dynamism, and it can become merely playing itself and protecting yourself from life and not really getting anywhere. So I love Aurelius, but there's a sort of sadness to him. See, what happens in Stoicism that's good is it tells us to look within for strength, to look towards the inner light. But as Chesterton once said, the trouble is John begins by worshiping the inner light and ends up worshiping John. Okay? And so what happens is you turn inward, not because the Holy Spirit is indwelling us, as in Christianity, but you turn inward and you end up stagnating because you're caught in an egocentric loop out of which you can't break. So, again, there's goodness in Stoicism. Epictetus is another great person to read. But I think that ultimately it cannot lead anywhere, right? And so, again, if Christ did not raise from the dead, let's protect ourselves. Let's try to be as good citizens as we can. But we've lost the ultimate joy and purpose and motivation. And in the end, we just kind of stagnate.
And there is a better way. Well, Lou, it's been a more than a pleasure. I'd say it's been an education. And on behalf of our listeners and Hank and the crew here at CRI, thanks to you, really not just for joining us, but for the decades that you've invested in research, writing, teaching, and your willingness to share the fruits of your labors with those of us genuinely wanting to love God with all our minds. As a reminder to our listeners, to receive a copy of Lou's book, Atheism on Trial, as our thanks for your gift in this critical month of June, the end of CRI's fiscal year, simply go to equip.org, or by mail, just send your gift to CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271 is the zip. And for those eager to stand shoulder to shoulder with us on a regular basis in the battle for life and to truth, let me encourage you to become a member of CRI's support team. Just visit equip.org to see a terrific selection of equipping essential resources that we've selected, along with other benefits that you'll receive as a support team member. Perhaps the greatest benefit being the satisfaction of knowing that you're helping to equip fellow believers 24/7 at home and around the world to be effective witnesses for our risen Lord. That's it for this edition of the Bible Answer Man. God bless, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. In appreciation for your gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches during the key month of June, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you a copy of Atheism on Trial, Refuting the Modern Arguments Against God by Dr. Louis Marcos. Just call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271, or simply visit online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.
In recent years, atheists have forwarded virulent criticisms against Christianity, claiming that they have a more enlightened, scientific, and sophisticated worldview. Despite what these atheists might think, their verbal assaults are nothing new. In his book, Atheism on Trial, Dr. Louis Marcos confronts these recycled claims and shows that they have already been disproven by Christian thinkers of the past. and you can use the same logic to silence these claims today. Are you ready to put atheism on trial? Get equipped with answers to the tough questions about your faith and speak with confidence, knowing that the trial of public opinion versus universal truth has already been held and Christ is the victor. To receive your copy of Atheism on Trial, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org.